Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm going to call Human Services Finance and Policy to order. Ms. Hansen, can you please take the roll?
Yes, of course. Good morning. Chair Schultz.
Present.
Vice Chair Bonner.
Present.
Lead Albright.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Burkle.
Present.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher, present.
Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Hansen.
Present.
Representative Keel.
Present.
Representative Liebling.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Noor.
Present.
Thank you. Representative Novotny.
Novotny, present.
Representative Pearson.
Pearson, present.
Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Sandel.
Present.
And Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher, present.
It's a full house, Chair Schultz. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. We do have a quorum. Let's see, Representative Albright, would you like to make a motion to move the minutes from March 15th?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Albright moves the minutes from March 15th, 2022. Any corrections? Not seeing any. Please unmute yourself for a voice vote. All those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Okay, members, we have many bills on our agenda today. The first one is House File 2416, and we have Chair Marquardt here with us. Welcome to the committee. I'll make a motion to move to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. Why don't you tell us a little about your bill? I'm not seeing any amendments. Is that correct, Chair Marquardt?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Okay, why don't you tell us about the bill?
So, well, thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. House File 2416 relates to legislation that occurred back in 2013 where the human services functions in three counties, Becker, Clearwater, and Manoman, were transferred to the White Earth Tribal Nation. And at the time, the Department of Human Services said, you go ahead and to the White Earth Tribal Nation, you go ahead and do the startup and take those costs, and we will reimburse you later. Well, the cost of the startup was about $1 million, and up to this point, about $250,000 has been reimbursed. And so what this bill does is over the next 3 years, it would reimburse that remaining $750,000 at $250,000 a year. And Madam Chair, if this bill would happen to be in the omnibus bill, you would have to move the years up by one, but we just didn't do that today. Mr. Bill Haas is here today to talk about the history and any other details that would be needed.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Yes, I understand that if this gets included in the omnibus, we will update the date so it's accurate. We do not need an amendment to do that. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Haas. Please state your name and your affiliation, and then you can proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bill Haas, and I represent the White Earth Tribal Nation. Back in 2011, Representative Abler at the time approached White Earth and said, you know, you guys are doing all the human services functions for the tribe, and we're duplicating services with the county. So would you guys be willing to take over the function? So I sat down with the tribal chair and the executive director at that time, and we talked about it, and they said, yeah, because it would provide better services for the members on White Earth. So we started the process, and in the process, once we got all the legislation put together, DHS at the time said, you know, we've already started our budgeting process, and we know there's startup costs. So if you guys would upfront the starting costs, then we'll reimburse you in the next budget cycle. So we said, okay. And so at that point, White Earth proceeded to upgrade computer systems. They ran 26 miles of fiber optic cable to meet the standards for communicating with the DHS computers. And we took the money from various programs on the reservation in order to do this. We, in 2013 and 14 cycle, we were in the Health and Human Services bill for full reimbursement. And when the final bill came out of conference committee, the $1 million was taken out. And so we didn't get it. In 2015-16 cycle, we were in the tax bill. Senator Scoie put us in the tax bill. Governor Dayton did not sign the tax bill that year. So we lost out on that. In 2017 and 18, we were removed again in conference committee. And then in 2019 and 20, we received $250,000 in the tax bill. So what we're requesting today, and the reason why it's structured when we drafted the bill last year was, in fact, with COVID and that, we felt it would be easier for the state to make three payments of $250 each for 3 years. You know, the committee, if they would like to, and we would like to, if we could have a full $750 at one point, if that would be the will of the committee, that would be fine. Otherwise, a $250 would work. White Earth has received high marks from DHS for the handling of our human services functions. Our staff has done very well in doing this. And White Earth, over the years, we've done a lot of innovative things with human services. They've actually saved human services money. One of the major ones is our drug treatment programs for youth, and we're just about ready to open up our adult facility. And those funds to operate those facilities are all coming from the federal government. It's not coming from the Consolidated Treatment Fund. So we've saved, since 2007, we've saved the state quite a bit of money in drug treatment for youth, and we've been very successful at it. But there's an Indian Child Welfare, we've been very successful in that, and relieving the counties of their share of paying for Indian Child Welfare. And frankly, we saved the counties a lot of money in the human services transfer. So I appreciate the support of the committee today, and I'll stand for any questions. And Madam Chair, appreciate you giving us a bill hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Haas. Are there any questions for the Chair Marquardt or for the testifier? Not seeing any questions. Any final comments, Chair Marquardt?
Just thank you and appreciate the committee support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, we'll definitely look at this as we're putting together the omnibus. So thank you for bringing this forward, Chair Marquardt. So with that, members.
Thank you.
House File 2416 will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. Okay, the next bill we have is House File 3737. This is Representative Morrison's bill. Is she with us? I don't see Representative Morrison yet. Hold on a second. Okay, we're going to move on and come back to that bill because I do not see Representative Morrison with us yet. We will go to House File 3738. This is Representative Hansen. And I'm going to move to adopt the division report for House File 3738. This is going to be a voice vote. So all those in favor of adopting the division report, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the division report is adopted. And my motion will be to lay over House File 3738 and lay it over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. Representative Hansen, would you like to describe your bill? And I don't see an amendment to this. Is that correct?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And right now, that is correct. We do have an amendment coming, though, for this bill, and I'm happy to talk about it with any folks. I'll mention it briefly in my comments, though, as well. And thank you, committee members, for hearing this bill. We heard this bill in behavioral health and received some really good feedback. The counties and others have continued to work together on this bill as well. So this is a work in progress, but it's a very important topic. And the amendment that's coming to this language will remove the creation of a new mental health care benefit that's referenced in the current version. So I want to begin by highlighting that. And it also makes some other changes that were negotiated with providers and with DHS to continue to improve CTSS overall. It just wasn't ready in time for today's committee, but the changes will make sure we align with the goals of the bill. And so the overall goal of HF 3738 is to improve access to children's mental health services. We've heard the call for more mental health support from around the state. Various agencies and such are looking for more support. This bill seeks to make policy changes and updates under the Children's Therapeutic Support Services, or CTSS, and includes opportunities to streamline a very prescriptive program environment. It updates provider roles and simplifies some of the reporting requirements within the CTSS. So this bill is the result of work from a collaborative efforts of a community of community providers, schools, the Department of Education, the Department of Human Services, and the Governor's Children's Cabinet. The goal is to increase children's access to mental health care. It formed under this effort and developed recommendations across multiple areas of the children's mental health system. This important work is ongoing in this work group, and this bill is just one piece of the important steps of the bill. So as we know, the state's mental health system is under a workforce crisis and extreme stress, and the full impact is resulting in health agencies not being able to keep up programs and the client's growing needs for care. There's existing regulatory requirement and reporting requirements of our behavioral health programs, including CTSS, are really burdensome for providers, and it distracts them from delivering the quality of care that their clients really need and deserve. Providers spend an increasing amount of their time complying with this documentation, and our providers are exponentially feeling the weight of this burden in the current workforce crisis. Existing staff are working beyond 100% capacity to meet the growing needs of the community, all while having to spend more time and on documentation. This is a big part of why we're losing clinicians from the field, and I think that's an important piece of this bill to highlight. And the providers aren't alone in this. When providers are overwhelmed, children and their families who rely on the services feel this weight too. They have to complete numerous forms, answer repeated questionnaires, be referred out for care, and are frequently put on long waiting lists. Our mental health system is facing a higher need for care, high administrative reporting requirements, and less people to do the work. This bill significantly removes some of the barriers that's taking away that time for provider care. And I also want to take this opportunity to mention some of the conversations I've had with stakeholders that highlight the continued work we need to do in CTSS just to publicly discuss this. I've talked with the Minnesota School Social Workers Association and the Minnesota Administrators for Special Education. And I just, like I said, want to publicly acknowledge that there's a lot more that needs to be done in this section to address some of the specific challenges that providers in school settings are facing. They would like to see us expand statutes that include an allowance for a variance under CTSS for districts to access some federal Medicaid reimbursements. The school district should be able to access that. They can through existing statute, but there's some other limitations that have come up. And so I just think that's a continued conversation we need to have, and I want to acknowledge that. Though this piece is not included in HF 3738, there's approximately $10 million on the table that schools can't access. And so that continued conversation is coming. So I want to be sure to highlight this as a part of the continued work that must continue for CTSS reform to make sure that this voice is brought forth from the whole community of providers. And with that, Madam Chair, I would like to turn it over to my testifiers, Jinley Palin and Lucas Knosh. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. So our first testifier is Lucas Knosh, and you're the Director of Business Development from Fraser. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you so much, Chair Schultz and committee. My name is Lucas Knosh. I am the Director of Business Development at Fraser. Some of you may know Fraser as a community mental health center. We're a nonprofit that's really well known for serving young kids, kids with autism, and kids with other unique needs. I participated in the work group that Representative Hansen talked about, but I'm just speaking for myself today. And I want to start by just expressing gratitude for all the work that the legislature has already been completing around mental health and children's mental health this session, including the streamlining package that you passed last year. It has helped a considerable amount. There's still a lot of work left to do, and this bill will help us take another small step forward. As Representative Hansen talked about, there's a lot more that exists outside of this bill that's really critical for you all to hear about and consider as we continue with the urgency to make children's mental health as accessible as possible in these very unique times. I'm not gonna comment on the technical content of this particular bill, but I do want to just encourage the committee to keep it in your consideration, both as a provider at Fraser, but also as a family member. I've been with Fraser for about 20 years. One of my very first roles was working in public policy, and I've spent many years reading this particular statute that you're considering today. If you would have gone back 20 years ago, I would have said it's critical, critical, critical for the legislature to make this statute as comprehensive, as detailed, and as complicated as possible, because it's so important for us to ensure that we have quality in children's mental health. My perspective has completely changed now that I've moved on in my roles at Fraser. I don't work in public policy anymore, but one thing that has changed is my family's child, right about third grade, started receiving ongoing mental health services. And it's been a complete contrast for me sitting on the other side of the table now, really understanding how do these very complicated rules play out in the real world. What does it actually mean for family members, for the clinicians, for the programs that are so essential? And I've developed a deep appreciation that unintentionally, myself included, all of us as stakeholders over the years have put a lot into the statute that, despite the good intentions, has unintentionally created lots of complexity and lots of confusion for not just families, but also the clinicians and the providers. And the best thing we can do right now is to really continue streamlining and taking every opportunity to look at the small things we can do and the big things we can do to make it much easier and more accessible for these programs to continue to be available for kids and families. So I will just conclude by thanking you for considering this bill. And I'll also thank you in advance for considering some of those recommendations that Representative Hansen mentioned other stakeholders are bringing forward. I know that there are lots of stakeholders who will be coming forward with lots of great ideas for how to continue making children's mental health just more and more available to kids at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kunak, for coming to testify to share your experience and expertise. So members, we have two testifiers that are available for questions, Ginny Palin and Kirsten Anderson. So please raise your hand if you have any questions for those testifiers or for the bill author. Not seeing any questions. Representative Hansen, we really appreciate your expertise in this area and thank you for doing this work on the bill. Do you have any final comments?
Just thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. I know this is complex, so thank you for kind of letting me unfold it so we can talk about, you know, some of the complexities out here, and I appreciate your support. This is going to make sure that kids and families get the services that they need and deserve and part of bulking up that mental health workforce that we've said we want.
Okay, thank you, Representative Hansen. With that, House File 3738 will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Finance Bill. Okay, members, we'll go back to House File 3737. Representative Morrison, thank you for being with us today this morning. I'm going to move to adopt the division report for House File 3737 from the Behavioral Health Division. Members, this is a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the division report's adopted. And my motion will be to lay over House File 3737 for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Representative Morrison, I'm not seeing any amendments, so please go right to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My apologies for keeping you waiting. House File 3737 is legislation aimed at improving and sustaining the delivery of behavioral health home services an integrated multidisciplinary team-based model designed to support coordination of care for children and adults with mental illnesses. Behavioral health homes, sometimes referred to as BHHs, are one of the key components of our state's continuum of mental health services, a continuum that is more vital than ever before, given the growing mental health needs in our communities at this time. The legislation was brought to me by the statewide coalition of providers who offer this critical mental health service in communities around the state. The legislation would require DHS to work with stakeholders, including providers of this service, to establish a single statewide reimbursement rate for behavioral health home services. I want to thank my co-author, Representative Baker, for joining me on this bill. The bill also has bipartisan co-authorship in the Senate and has been heard in Chair Abler's Human Services Committee. I ask for your support of this bill aimed at making the reimbursement rate for this important mental health service more reflective of the cost of providing the service. And I believe that there's time for one testifier, Madam Chair.
Yes, I'll go to the testifier. We have Allison Harwood. Welcome to the committee. Ms. Harwood, please state your name and your affiliation and then proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Allison Harwood and I am the Director of Health Services with Zumbro Valley Health Center. Zumbro Valley Health Center is a community mental health center nonprofit serving southeastern Minnesota. We prioritize our service delivery for publicly insured and uninsured individuals with mental illness, substance use, comorbid physical health conditions, and or housing instability, and have been a certified behavioral health home since 2016, one of the original BHHs in the state. To give you just a kind of high level overview of what services are provided within BHH that are vital in the continuum of mental health services, we serve individuals that are diagnosed with mental illness or emotional disturbance and comorbid chronic health conditions. All individuals in the program are screened for commercial tobacco use and other substance use, gaps in preventative healthcare services, which is more exacerbated than ever by the COVID-19 pandemic and some of those services being put off for long periods of time. Gaps in management of chronic health conditions and needs related to social determinants of health. Clients are connected to resources and are referred for services to ensure their basic needs are met, to reduce gaps in care, and to support engagement in their needed mental health and substance use and physical health services. Individuals are provided with person-centered coaching, support, and education to improve their self-efficacy in managing their chronic physical and mental health conditions and navigating the complex health and social service systems. Individuals experiencing hospitalizations or emergency department visits receive timely care coordination and follow-up, and we connect them back to mental health, substance use, and or crisis services to hopefully prevent, adverse outcomes, things like medication errors, readmissions, and suicide attempts, which are all more prevalent in the weeks and days following discharge from hospitals and EDs. Zumbro Valley Health Center supports this bill. We currently make this service available at a financial loss to our organization. We're budgeted to lose over $60,000 this year alone on this program. The BHH rate has been flat since 2016 and doesn't even cover our staff costs. This leaves all of our program costs, technology, phones, materials, and administrative costs not covered. Every year we do have to discuss if we can keep our program going or sustain enough staff to meet the client needs. We know this model of care works, but we need the payment for BHH to be more reflective of the cost of providing the service. It's more important now than ever as we struggle to meet the rapidly growing mental health needs of our communities, especially during this workforce and sustainability crisis. We believe the rate proposal will improve BHH access to more clients each year, and that a new sustainable payment for BHHs is a major step in keeping providers from continuing to lose money providing this service and being forced to consider closing it. We ask for your support of this bill to strengthen access to this very important piece of our mental health services continuum. Thank you for considering this bill, and I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Harwood. Are there any questions from members? You guys are quiet this morning. I'm not seeing any questions. Can you describe, I don't know, maybe Representative Morrison or Ms. Harwood, the inflation index for the payment? Ms. Representative Morrison?
Madam Chair, do you mean the Medicare Economic Index?
Yes.
You know, it's a federal CMS-approved factor that's used across other Medicaid payment methodologies. DHS probably would do a better job of explaining it in more detail, but it's a part of tracking with inflation, is my understanding.
Okay, and it's my understanding that that is more accurate than just a general inflation rate. So it's probably the appropriate index, the Medicare Economic Index. Okay, I'm not seeing any other questions. Any final comments, Representative Morrison?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for consideration of this important bill and your omnibus. It's important that a reimbursement rate reflective of the true cost of providing this service become reality. So I appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Morrison, and thank you, Ms. Harwood, for your testimony today. So with that, members, House File 3737 will be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Okay, going back to the agenda, the next item is House File 4085. And this bill, the motion will be to lay over House File 4085 for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Representative Hansen, would you like to explain your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you again, members. HF 4085 seeks to build on a conversation that we had last year with Representative Frederick's PCA driving bill. Currently, PCAs are not allowed to drive their clients to medical appointments, work, or other activities, since these are considered IADLs versus ADLs. An IADL is considered an instrumental activity of daily living, and an ADL is an activity of daily living. The difference between IADLs and ADLs is that an IADL is not necessary for basic functioning. However, I would argue that IADLs are necessary to empower people with disabilities to live and fully participate in their community. Additionally, allowing PCAs to drive their clients for IADLs has a cost savings for the state, since the alternative option is to hire a more expensive medical transport service. And these medical transport services are not widely available, especially outside of the metro area. We also know that the upcoming CFSS transition poses its own challenges and that this bill may intersect with that, and we stand ready to discuss that further as it unfolds. And with that, Madam Chair, I will turn it over to my testifier, who will tell you a little bit more about the importance of this change.
Okay, we have Ted Stamp. He's our first testifier. Are you with us, Mr. Stamp? There you are. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ted Stamp. I'm an independent living advocate for the Southwestern Center for Independent Living here in Marshall, and I'm just one of the many persons with a disability across the state that is affected by this current statutory restriction. Under the present statute, the personal care attendants on whom persons like myself rely daily to help us live independently are not allowed to drive us anywhere, but only to accompany us. In rural Southwest Minnesota, where I live, there are community transit buses, but their availability is limited in the evenings and on weekends, which is to say you have to make an appointment during the week, during the weekdays, to have those appointments on the weekend or on the evening. Therefore, if you face an emergency in the evening or on the weekend, you're forced to financially burden the state by calling an ambulance. And much of greater Minnesota doesn't even have public transportation like we do in this area. Moreover, with the ongoing threat of periodic epidemics popping up unpredictably, it's more crucial than ever that Minnesotans with disabilities have quick and easy access to the healthcare, which may mean the difference between life and death. Therefore, by allowing PCAs to drive us, either in our own vehicles or when possible in theirs, this problem is instantly solved, which at the same time saves the state money. And I would add a lot of money. To give another example, when because of this statutory restriction, people in this situation are forced to use the Medifan services just mentioned to go to out-of-town appointments, medical appointments. Does it make sense that the state should pay the drivers of these vehicles at a higher rate than a PCA could be paid for doing the same job, especially since the PCA is often riding along anyway, which means the state is paying for two people, driver and caregiver, when just one is necessary to do both jobs. Many people on the PCA program are unable to drive due to physical or cognitive disabilities. I'm privileged to own my own accessible vehicle, but according to current statute, my PCAs are not able to drive me. If they do, or if they would, the PCA agency I use is not able to bill for this time that the PCA spends driving. This means, for example, I need to send my PCA to the store alone without me to pick out what they think I might want versus me being able to pick it out myself. This also means I can't ask a PCA to drive me to work or to visit family or friends or attend special occasions like weddings, funerals, or holidays. The PCA program is a home and community-based service, but this rule takes the community out of the service. Thank you very much, all of you, for hearing this. It affects Minnesotans like myself in a big way, and it affects the state in a big way, fiscally, financially, and I just thank you for the honor and privilege of being able to testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Stamp, for being with us today to share your experience. The next testifier I have is Jeff Bangsberg. Nice to see you, Mr. Bangsberg. Welcome to the committee. State your name, affiliation, and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jeff Bangsberg, and I'm a disability advocate for the community, and I sit on a few boards, the Metropolitan Center for Independent Living and the Area Agency on Aging for the metropolitan area as well. Thank you for hearing this particular bill today, House File 4085. This has been one of our legislative priorities for quite a while, and I'd like to thank Representative Hansen for authoring this bill. And I'd also like to take the opportunity to thank Representative Frederick for authoring the bill that we had introduced last year. And as you may recall, this bill was a version of this bill was included in the Health and Human Services Omnibus legislation last summer when you were negotiating this through, but only a part of it. In other words, it was the community first services and supports part, which is what the PCA program is slowly going to convert into once that gets approved by the federal government. And this has been on the books now for 8 years, I think, and it keeps getting delayed for one reason or another for this conversion. And we are hearing that it might come up as early as this summer. But it was supposed to become effective last January of last year. So we're still waiting out there. And technically, PCAs are still not allowed to drive. And so this would just help us get things kind of moving along a little bit. And the other issue is once the CFS does come into play and the feds allow that to happen for that whole transition, we are becoming aware that it's going to take 18 to 24 months to slowly phase in providers across the state into this whole CFSS model, which is extremely complex. So just to incorporate the personal care assistant into instrumental activities of daily living will assure that all providers can start this as soon as we get the green light to go ahead from the feds to make this happen. So I would encourage you to make this thing a reality once again, and thank you for the time, and I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bangsberg. I have a question, so maybe Ms. Grom, someone from DHS could help me answer it if you are available. My question has to do with federal approval. So it sounds like we would need a federal waiver to do this. Are other states reimbursing? Is the Fed reimbursing this service in other states? How long would it take? If they pay for it, would it just be, it would be a state and a federal share, I'm assuming, Ms. Grom?
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. Christy Grom with the Department of Human Services. I believe, so we wouldn't need a waiver plan amendment, but I believe we need a state plan amendment to make this effective. So we would probably assume at a minimum 6 months in order to get that approval once the legislature authorizes the funding required for this bill. So probably January 1, 2023 would be the earliest we would assume, given the response time that we have with CMS right now. I'm not sure what other states are doing and if they reimburse for this, but I can certainly get back to you on that question. And then I think you had one more question embedded in there that I'm not remembering. Was there something else?
So this would be, would it be a 50-50 Fed-state share?
Madam Chair, I believe for the personal care assistance, that is the federal match that we get. It's a little bit different for community first services and supports, but for PCA, it's 50-50, I believe.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Grom. Any questions from members? Mr. Bangsberg, you're smiling. Did you want to respond?
Oh, it's just okay. I've been waiting to do this for so many years. I can't believe that we actually might be able to see it happen this year.
Okay, I'm not seeing any questions from members. Representative Hansen, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. And thank you, Jeff and everyone for testifying. And Ted, you know, this is what Jeff's comment there just was, is what I believe when we talk about politics is how we care about each other. It's listening to people in the disability community. It's hearing their voices. And just for a moment, imagine that you're going to work, but you have to have somebody drive you everywhere. I think a lot of us don't understand the barriers that that faces and what, you know, that different experience in the world is like. And so just taking a second to pause and think about what would your life look like if you had to pause to wait to have somebody drive you everywhere you needed to go, or your father or your mother or your sibling needed to go. That's how important this is. And we are restricting people's ability to live their full lives. And I'm just looking forward to continuing this conversation and getting this through so folks can catch a ride with their PCA where they need to go.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. And I hope your enthusiasm is contagious. We need more of that around here. So thank you. Thank you, testifiers. So with that, members, House File 4085 will be laid over for possible inclusion. We are just rocking and rolling here. Okay, so the next bill is House File 3844. And the motion is to lay House File 3844 over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. Representative Hansen, this bill is also yours, so please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you again, my fellow committee members, for hearing me out today on these really important, impactful bills. So House File 3844 seeks to do something a little complex, so we're going to use some acronyms, but I'll explain what they mean. So it seeks to align how we calculate our MFIP income for parents with disabilities. This bill is very narrowly targeted to address technical barriers facing low-income parents with disabilities who are accessing federal RSDI disability benefits and who still struggle to make ends meet. As a reminder, parents with disabilities receiving RSDI disability have worked more hours and earned more wages in order to be eligible for RSDI disability. Parents with disabilities receiving SSI disability have less work history, making them ineligible for RSDI disability until they work more hours to qualify. However, there is a disincentive to work more hours to become eligible for RSDI disability because recipients receive far less to no assistance from MFIP if the parent if the parent goes to RSDI disability. As stated in the letter of support from the Children's Defense Fund of Minnesota, even though federal SSI disability benefits are fully excluded as income for MFIP benefit calculations, federal RSDI disability benefits are deducted dollar for dollar, which significantly reduces that MFIP cash assistance. This means that parents with disabilities who receive federal RSDI disability will receive less or no MFIP benefits because they have more work experience. And in turn, this also means that the children of parents with disabilities are most directly impacted as well. Parents with disabilities who are striving to build their resumes and work histories are put in really tough spots. And this bill has the potential to either increase or restore cash assistance for, we're waiting for the number, I think the rough estimate was about 1,000 families, but I'll say hundreds of families across the state of Minnesota. Just to personalize this bill a little bit, I just want to give you a quick example of how this current statute plays out. A 40-year-old mother has been living for 20 years with a traumatic brain injury. She's got four children. She believes it's important to work, even though her brain injury makes it very difficult to do so. She has had many jobs over the years and has tried her best to keep up, but her disability makes it tough to keep up with the demands of a job. Nevertheless, she kept trying to find a good fit and didn't give up. During this time, she'd been receiving SSI disability. By 2021, nearly 20 years after her injury occurred, she finally worked enough hours to become eligible for RSDI disability. However, to her surprise, when she transitioned to RSDI, she lost nearly all of her MFIP assistance on which she relied to feed, clothe, and house her family, particularly when she was in between jobs. The health impacts of a life with disability ebb and flow with good days and bad days, which makes maintaining employment difficult, to say the least. These are some of the most vulnerable families in Minnesota, and it's imperative that we do our part to make sure they are treated with equity regardless of their time in the workforce. I'll add that we do have some plans to make an amendment, which again wasn't ready for today, but it's to remove the language from 2.28, on line 2.28 to 2.9 from the word received to unit. So that's an upcoming amendment. And if anyone has questions about that, feel free to reach out. But with that, Madam Chair, I'll turn it over to my testifier.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. So we have Jessica Webster from Legal Aid. Welcome back to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation and then proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid. And thank you to Representative Hansen for carrying this bill. And you just did a far better job of explaining a very weedy thing than I could have. But so Legal Aid has long supported investment in the Minnesota Family Investment Program. We've been very happy to see some incremental increases the last few years. This bill is very narrowly targeted, as Representative Hansen said, to some parents with disabilities that are on a federal disability track. That is, there is a disincentive and a penalty within MFIP. So we're focused on a really narrow section of families accessing MFIP. And Legal Aid is concerned, particularly concerned about this group of families, because these are parents who the federal government has identified as really not being able to work at the moment. And so as we talk about the Minnesota Family Investment Program and investing in families to get back to work or to get more education and training, this is a group of families that for the moment has significant disabilities and won't be able to maybe supplement wages or their family income in a way that maybe some other families can. And with SSI, as Representative Hansen said, we fully exclude that income dollar for dollar. But for RSDI, which is essentially the same benefit, but as Representative Hansen said, folks have converted to RSDI because they've worked more, they've had more wages. There is that strong penalty within MFIP that you lose your cash assistance. So we see this as a program alignment. It's bringing equity between families, parents with disabilities. It's narrowly focused. And the last thing I'll say is that Legal Aid has long advocated investment in MFIP, particularly when we have a surplus in the federal TANF fund. And right now there is a surplus in the TANF fund. TANF dollars are federal dollars that are intended to pay for families participating in the Minnesota Family Investment Program. So this is a textbook example of something we should be using TANF dollars for, and those exist. And so it shouldn't have an impact to the general funds to make this alignment within the program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Webster. Are there any questions from members? Not seeing any questions from members. So members, in my opinion, I think we need to remove all barriers to being able to work more. So this is a great workforce bill as well. So with that, Representative Hansen, closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members, and Jessica for testifying today. I appreciate you just hearing me out on all three of these really important bills. On this one, this is a simple, you know, small thing that has a huge impact. And I'm just really looking forward to including this this year. And if you have any suggestions or questions, please reach out to me. And again, thank you everybody for your time, and I hope you have a great day.
Thank you, Rep. Hansen. We don't have a fiscal note yet, but we look forward to getting one. With that, House File 3844 will be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. And members, tomorrow we have a slate of bills on the docket, including a bill on competency restoration that will be headed over to Judiciary. And we have scheduled a hearing for Friday the 25th in case we need it. We will let you know if we need that hearing, but it should be on your calendar or in your email inbox. So members, have a great rest of your day. I will see you tomorrow, and we are adjourned.